Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, greetings.
Oh. Good to be back.
It is, isn't it? You miss me when you're gone, don't you?
I do, John. I really do. And you know, it seems like we don't have the time to do the things we used to do.
That's true. Both our schedules are busier than ever. I mean, it's actually a challenge to figure out a day or three each month when we can get together and do these.
Right, right. Yeah. Let's see. I've got, Sweden coming up again in March.
Oh.
Going to do that for a third year in a row. The Craft Brew Conference in Malmo, Sweden. It's March, I think, 8th or 9th or something like that this year, or 7th and 8th. Fantastic conference. And well worth people's showing up. It's limited seating, I think. Limited, like 80 people. And it's all done in English. It's fantastic. It's so well done.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyone, you know, in Europe should be going to this thing. If you care about brewing beer, you should be trying to grab a seat at that before they're all gone. I think it's a really good one. And then I'm going to use that opportunity to do some... Pine Nights probably in the Netherlands, and maybe do something in Copenhagen, and then probably something down in England as well. Maybe something in Paris this time. I don't know.
Oh, really?
I'm in talks. My people are in talks with the people.
We should swing by Trondheim and visit my friends at Ausmann. That's a great place.
Trondheim and Ausmann.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next place we'll probably see each other is... at least to hang out some, is Portland for the Homebrewers Conference, huh?
That's right, yeah. That'll be a lot of fun. We had a good time in Portland a couple of years ago.
Right.
I love Portland.
With our good friend John Blickman.
Yes.
As I recall. And indeed. We went to, we did that dinner.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of riding on the Met. And there was... some eating and a lot more drinking. And then I remember we finished up at like some whiskey place, some cocktail place where like...
Oh, yeah.
Some raccoon was like walking down the street and...
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Some giant raccoon. And I remember...
You'll catch that.
I think I picked up the tab at the whiskey place at the end.
You might have. That was a superb place.
And it was priced as such. Yeah. As I recall.
There was something about it where is it like the Palmer Whiskey House or something, or it was on Palmer Street. Seems like there was some connection there.
Right, right.
If I remember correctly.
Well,
I had been drinking, but.
There's, ever since then, I've been back in Oregon just about once a quarter or at least a couple times a year up there visiting our distributor and doing some events and stuff, and I've come to find a couple of other really killer places.
Oh, nice.
That I've been having a lot of fun at. And he took me to one that must have had like 1,000 different whiskeys. It was just amazing. Maybe it was like 1,500. It was something really insane. It's like an entire wall of just that. And there's a cheesemonger place where you get cheese and beer and a bunch of different cheeses. I mean, if you love cheese, it's really spectacular. I mean,
cool.
You went. Did
oh, yeah,
you
that's
not?
Right. Yeah. That's the first place that I met you guys at. Right. That's right.
Yeah, the cheese
place is awesome.
Right. Oh, they've got a second location.
Oh.
Yeah. The selection of cheeses are just amazing.
Yeah.
And then they have like 6 or 8 craft mm-hmm. beers on.
Yeah. They're the nicest people, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That. They're super nice. And I could have just sat there all day mm-hmm. eating cheese, drinking beer. Yeah. I didn't need to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, and next time we got to take you by Frank's Noodle House or whatever it is.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say we got to go to our noodle place.
Right? Did I tell you about that last
time?
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah, actual Frank's handmade Chinese noodles.
Frank pulls his own noodles.
Wow,
it's all hand pull.
All hand pulled noodles.
Straight out of Kung Fu Panda.
Right. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like some house somewhere. You kind of walk into this house.
Just like a house that turned into a business.
Yeah.
That's and, awesome. Yeah. Some of the coolest
They don't
things.
Make the noodles until you order.
Wow.
But it's still pretty quick. And, oh, it's just delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Awesome.
So we got to make sure. See, we're going to have to get there early, John. We're all going to have to get there early.
Yeah, there's way too much to do.
We got a couple of days just to hit the cheese place, uh-huh. to hit the noodle place, hit the whiskey place.
Yeah.
We got to do all that.
Yeah.
And then there's like dozens of more things. And then everyone mm-hmm. will show up, and then we got to do all the conference
all
stuff.
All the stuff.
Yeah. It's a plan. We'll do it.
All right. Well, and we should make sure we bring along our good friend John Blickman.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I'm sure he would love all of that. We just need to tell him to get out there a couple days early.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I know he'll be there because he's there at every conference. Showing off all the new innovations he has in brewing equipment, all the cool stuff. Like I was just so I think I had just not seen the Riptide pump prior to this last conference.
Right.
And I didn't realize how innovative it really was.
It is a nice pump. It really is.
I mean, you know, and there's just some of the things about using a pump that he has resolved.
Yeah,
you know,
like a bleed valve, so you can get the bubbles out.
Exactly,
self-priming, yeah.
and being able to disassemble it in a heartbeat, and then reassemble it again. If you want to take it apart and you know check something or you know clean it out or whatever, it just comes right apart, goes right back together. You know, the rotatable inlet outlet. I mean, just so many great things about that pump. It's just that's what he does. Innovates, you know, making your life simpler, your brew day more fun and more productive. And that's what Blickman Engineering is all about. So check them out, BlickmanEngineering.com. And if you get a chance, I'd appreciate it if you email John Blickman at feedback@BlickmanEngineering.com and told him that you appreciated his paying for this show. Because if he didn't, I'm not sure Justin would allow us to continue doing this.
That's right.
I don't think Justin likes us.
No.
I think he really hates us.
Blickman might be the only guy who's holding this together.
Right. So make sure you tell him how much you appreciate that he does this for us. Yeah, and hopefully he'll get to Portland early and we'll be able to hook up and go around and do these things. You know, if we worked really diligently, if we woke up early, I bet, and we woke up early and we focused and we stayed out late, we could get all these things done in one day.
I think you're right, yeah.
Well, where was the place that we had that amazing dinner at?
Man. Like the octopus.
The octopus and the steak and the...
I can picture it. I know mm-hmm. very open bar, high ceilings.
Yeah.
It was near Cascade. I know that.
It's walking distance
from Cascade.
They're so good,
to the restaurant. Mm-hmm.
And they have Evil Twin on all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing.
That was great.
That was amazing, too. Oh, we had such a good time.
Mm.
All right. Speaking of having a good time, we are going to do a live Q&A show today, right now.
All righty. I'm ready.
It's happening.
All right. Let's do this. Light this rocket.
Taylor Price, find the...
Okay, now I got the sheets. I got the sheets.
Porno Steve's got the sheets.
I thought you said Taylor for a second there.
I wasn't sure who you were talking about.
Yeah.
All right, this one's about CO2 grades. Dave is asking, is paintball CO2 grade okay for consumption? He said he's noticed a lot of places carrying paintball CO2 equipment for kegging. And after some research, he found different grades of CO2 and was wondering if, the paintball store is okay for getting CO2 for carbonating beer, pretty much. He lives in an apartment, so he has very little room for a larger tank. Not to mention his kegerator only has room for a 20-ounce paintball tank.
My personal thought is, it's fine. Now,
how different are the grades?
There's a purity level, in one versus the other. But, what's going to be in there? I mean, people are imagining something really horrible is going to be in there. And perhaps it could be, but air. From my point of view, air. From my point of view, the thing that's going to hurt you about beer is the alcohol. Alcohol is toxic.
You're saying it's
and
more,
will kill you.
It's like you're drinking beer anyway. It's negligible compared to whatever else could be.
For me, I think it's fine. It's like, when you're eating outdoors and you may consume a bug or two. How many spiders do they say you eat over your lifetime just, through your mouth being open at night or something?
Apparently we eat like 7 spiders a year.
Something like that. It's like, spiders have venom in them, and they're probably covered in bacteria.
Walking around.
Yeah.
Bathroom floor. And
yeah, exactly.
Crawling in your mouth.
So, should you use food grade? Yes. The official answer of the Brewing Network is yes, you should use food grade. If it's me, I really don't care. You can pour me a beer anytime with any grade of CO2. I don't mind.
So what about for, let's say it's pretty safe for consumption. What about, is it going to change drastically for mouthfeel or really at all?
No, that's
There's
a good
not
question.
A huge difference.
Because you're talking about tiny levels of impurities.
Yeah.
And generally, it's like when you buy nitrogen. We use nitrogen for calibrating our equipment to know that, what zero oxygen is. And so we want nice, pure nitrogen. And when nitrogen isn't pure, it's got some oxygen in it.
Actual
water.
Water.
Yeah. It's got, a little bit of other stuff from the air in it.
What if you scale it up to a commercial?
It's not like it's got nuclear waste,
Yeah.
Welding grade is a good way to go. You can't go wrong with welding grade. Carbon dioxide or nitrogen.
Mm. Right. But again, people go, I've heard of people saying at their brewery, somebody wouldn't sell them welding grade because they had a brewery. It had to be food grade.
Yeah, food grade is not as clean as welding grade.
Right. So, beats the heck out of me. I just, I would use whatever you want to use as a home brewer. I don't think it's going to hurt you. I could be wrong, but if you don't believe, if you're concerned about it, use food grade. Pay the extra money, but I think it's safe enough.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions. Right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on 2 gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new Brew Easy.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of the buzz, the forum, the learning center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft lines.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone Certification Program offers 4 levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to brew their vast selection.
Do you know the 3 most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than 5-Star Chemicals. 5-Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And 5-Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, 5-Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. 5-Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And 5-Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the 5-Star solution. Visit 5starchemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the 5-Star treatment today.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing your Q&A questions. If you have questions for us at Brew Strong, you can send them to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com, and we will eventually, over the period of 10 years, get them answered for you.
Yes, because we'll definitely be around for another 10 years.
Right. Well, I'm just referring to the fact that it's been like 10 years that we've been answering questions, and we still haven't answered them all.
That's true.
So, We try and do as many of them as we can. Sometimes questions are repeated, and so we kind of drop those. But we try and at least get them all covered in one way or another. All right, next question there. Pornographic, Stephen.
All right. Recently, I have had two session beers that, when reaching the last few pints in the keg, I've noticed had become significantly watery. A Hellas that I brewed, similar to the Brewing Classic Styles version, had an OG of 1.047 and a color of 5 SRM. It sat in my keg fridge for about 2 months before I finished it. I keep the fridge relatively cold, about 35 degrees, since I also use it for crash cooling and conditioning. The last two pints of this beer not only tasted diluted, the color had changed from a rich golden shade to something more straw-colored, like a macro brew light beer. I had a very similar situation with an ordinary bitter that I recently made. These beers were fantastic initially, but the last few pints were lifeless. Is it really possible that, in what I'd consider a relatively short period of time, so much color and flavor could precipitate out?
That's different.
Right. You know, so, I mean, there's a few things that just leap to mind initially. You're thinking, well, it could be, you know, bacterial in nature, or, you know, yeast in nature that's consuming some of the color and thinning out some of the body and, you know, breaking down some of the dextrins and all that. But if it's 35 degrees Fahrenheit, I mean, you wouldn't think you'd get that much activity in 2 months. You'd get some.
Right, but not that much.
I think the other possibility then is that maybe he likes it with like a lot of yeast and other crap floating around in there, and that after, you know, 2 months, the fine little bits are settling out, and what he describes as watery and thin is like, well, it's no longer full of, you know, a yeast bite and haze and other crap floating around in there.
Yeah, that could be it. I can't think of another reason where the color would change unless, you know, something is really settling out.
Well, you know, Brett and things like that can consume color too. It can actually lighten up the color of a beer.
Okay, well, that could be it. Brett could be active potentially.
I mean, I've seen it, you know, consume oxidation.
Ah, well, yeah, that's true.
You know, oxidized products, which tend to be darker. I mean, this beer sounds dark for a Hellas at 5 SRM.
That's true.
That was the other thing I was thinking. It's like, well, yeah, it should be lighter in color. It should be fairly pale.
Yeah, straw is more appropriate. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know what to think on this one.
You should send it in to Dr. Homebrew.
Right, there you go. Well, I think here's one of the things. Let's say you live next to a great homebrew shop like Great Fermentations out in Indiana.
That's a good one.
I would say, you know, take in some of your beer at the very beginning when you think it's great. Take it in and have them taste it and give you some feedback on it. And then 2 months later, take in another sample when it's thin and just say, okay, same beer, what's happened? And, you know, those are some pretty clever people there at Great Fermentations. Great customer service. They know just about everything there is to know about Blickman products. And they got the largest catalog of Blickman products on the web. And real well-trained people. Great customer service. You know, if you're ordering something on the mail order, they'll ship it to you pretty much same day on most items. And like I said, great people. You can check them out at greatfermentations.com. On Facebook, they're GR8 Fermentation, and on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Check them out, greatfermentations.com. But those folks, they would tell you, you know, oh, you know, here's the issue. I bet you they could pick it out in a heartbeat. Most great homebrew shops will be able to do that. They'll have people that really have a lot of experience and have seen a lot of different things and can do it. It's just very difficult for us to be without able tasting. Without tasting the beer, tell you much more about that. So, I would say, you know, if you give us more information, here was my thought earlier on this was if when you're trying to diagnose something like this and you feel a beer has changed, one of the things to do is, you know, you should be testing your beer when it's finished, right before you package it or after you package it, right? What's the pH? What's the finished gravity? You know, for commercial, you should check your CO2 volumes, all that. After it's changed, if you're like, oh, it's changed, take another reading. Is the pH the same? Is the finishing gravity the same? Right? Has the carbonation changed? What's happened? And if you see, oh, now instead of 3 Play-Doh, it's down to 1 Play-Doh, it's like, ah, so it continued to attenuate. Something consumed the, you know, dextrins that were in there. Right. Or maybe it wasn't completely fermented in the first place. That goes back to our previous show with doing a forced ferment to know that a beer is actually fully attenuated. Maybe this person is putting a partially attenuated beer. Maybe they're not getting full attenuation to start with. And they're putting this into their kegerator, and maybe their temperature is not really 35 degrees. Maybe it's closer to 40-something. And slowly over time, the yeast in there is still consuming it, or maybe they have wild yeast and bacteria as well. And it's actually consuming the rest of the sugars because it wasn't fully attenuated in the first place. And now it's attenuating out all the way over time.
Yeah. Wild yeast, there's a little buzzword that we throw around a lot, and it may be good to mention that Saccharomyces cerevisiae variation diastaticus is often what we're talking about when we say a, quote, wild yeast.
Well, yes. That, and I include any yeast that was not intended. Right. Yeah. So that could be Brett. That could be, any one of a number of strains. But, absolutely. I think,
Diastaticus is good to be aware of because that's also what we often refer to as like a gusher infection, although that could be Brett as well, where the beer becomes very overcarbonated. All the residual dextrins get eaten. And the beer tastes like carbonated water once you've got diastaticus in it. And that could be in his keg.
Right.
That could be the factor there. Mm-hmm. I've had it in bottles over the years, various competitions and my own. So,
that's a good point. The thing I wanted to get to was testing. So, test it when you've packaged, record that, and then if there's a change in the beer, test it again and see what the change was. You know, did the pH change? Did the final gravity change? You know, you could take a sample and you could look at it under a microscope. You could plate it out. You could do a bunch of other things. Maybe you have a homebrew shop or a geeky beer person that could help you out with that as well.
Very good point.
All right. Another question.
This one is a question about haze.
Haze.
Two quick questions for you. I've recently switched to a half-assed, dangerously built electric setup using an ultra-low watt density stainless water heater element mounted in a kegel. Since switching to this setup, I've had a persistent haze in every batch that will not drop. I've tried finding with gelatin and polyclear, but it still won't set off. I haven't tried filtering yet to see if that works. Any ideas? Is this a case of causation, not making a correlation?
My first thought on that was, you know, is he getting the same level of boil that he was before?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because boil is important to coagulating the proteins and getting them out. And it could be something else, maybe ingredient change, et cetera, et cetera. But if it's truly just that change, I would wonder if his half-assed, dangerous electric element setup is truly giving him enough of a boil, or maybe it's getting a dead zone in the bottom or something. Maybe the element is up off the bottom 5-6 inches, and it's boiling from there up and not really doing much with the bottom level, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, that shouldn't be a problem, but it could. Mm-hmm. I wonder if his, how clean his element is now. I mean, if it's, you know, got burnt on crap, if that could be causing haze.
How clean's your element there, Steve?
You know, burnt on crap. I got to keep it clean, you know. I'm a professional, man. You know,
right, right. Got to keep a clean element.
Clean mm-hmm. element.
But yeah, it could be a different batch of malt too. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the malt, the change in malt over time, you can get real hazy. I mean, especially if you're buying sacks of malt and you're getting one crop and then the crop changes on you, you don't know. That can make a big difference.
Yeah. Protein levels and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'd wonder if he's getting as vigorous a boil for the same amount of time. And if not that, then I would think maybe the malt has changed. Mm-hmm. That's another possibility. Another reason to have a microscope, you can look at the hazy beer under that and you can see, oh, those are yeast cells under there, or it's not yeast cells, it's, you know, protein tannin complex. Easy way to check. All right, let's take a short break and we'll come back. We'll have more of your questions right after this.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
Find Heretic Beers near you. Click on Find Some at HereticBrewing.com.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer?
They make beer.
Watch out! Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Are you a member of the White Labs Customer Club? If not, you should be. It's the easiest way to earn free stuff for turning in your old homebrew labels from either Vials or Pure Pitch. All you have to do is save your labels and redeem them for things like free yeast, an exclusive White Labs t-shirt or sweatshirt, and even the opportunity to brew with the yeast man himself, Chris White. Signing up is easy. Just go to whitelabs.com/customer club, fill out the registration form, and then mail in your labels. They will return the favor by sending you awesome White Labs swag. Go sign up today at whitelabs.com/customer club. White Labs, pure yeast and fermentation since 1995.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. Answering your questions here on the Brewing Network. One question you should answer for yourself is, am I an AHA member? If you are not, or if you are in need of renewing your membership, a great offer is available. You go to thebrewingnetwork.com, click on the AHA link logo there, and you use the offer code BNARMY17, and you are going to get two free books with your membership or your renewal, Brewing Local and For the Love of Hops. So you get those with your membership renewal and do it through the Brewing Network store. You do it through thebrewingnetwork.com, through the AHA link. Then the Brewing Network gets a couple of bucks, and you get a great membership, and you support a great organization, and you get two free books. So everybody wins. Do that today. So the code is BNARMY17. All right, next question.
All right, this one's about astringency.
That looks like a long one.
It is a long one.
All right.
Okay. I have an ongoing astringency problem with my Kolsch, and it's driving me absolutely crazy. I can't figure it out. The setup is Blickman kettles with boil coils, so all electric. I'm using their RIMS rocket to circulate to keep the mash temp even. I've been doing a step mash on my Kolsch from dough in and a small protein rest, and then ramping to 149, then 158, then a mash out at 169. Don't go over 170, it's just superstition. My mash pH is between 5.2. He fly sparges, and that temp is 169, and he treats the water to below 6.0 pH, usually down to about 5.6. His water is very soft in Metro Atlanta, so I do just minor water adjustments. He adds calcium carbonate and some gypsum. He uses Martin Brungard's Bruin water to help with that. He carbon block filters the water to his liquor tank. The recipe is 90% Weyermann pills, 10% Vienna malt, and middle fruit hops at 60 minutes. Apparently it's a little bit like your recipe, but a little different.
Did you say calcium carbonate?
Yes.
Okay.
Makes a nice healthy starter a couple days prior, settles it, and pitches with or into a 14-gallon conical. Temp controlled at 60 and ramp it end to about 63 to clean up. Transfer to a 10-gallon keg to age in a chest freezer for at least 4 to 5 weeks. Then transfer to a 5-gallon keg for another week to carbonate. He made an alt and a Scottish 70 using the same process except for the step mashing. They were a single infusion and a mash out, and they were good. Notice astringency. One thing I think of is if could the step process through the RIMS rocket be causing that. I use it for my single infusion as well, but it doesn't have to heat up all that much for the stepping. I made a double on the first round of NHC in 2016 and got 41.5 in the second round using the same step mash process, so I'm not sure if the dark candy hid some of that astringency or not. He's going crazy with it. He's trying to brew it a sixth time with just a single infusion, see if that's a problem.
The mash pH you said was 5.2. No range given. Also, did he have pH after the mash?
I said mash pH is between 5.2, fly sparge, temp is 169. Treat the water to below 6.0 pH, usually down to about 5.6.
For the fly sparging?
For fly sparging, yeah, nothing else about pH.
Do you say what he treats it with?
The water?
Yeah.
I mean, gypsum and
yeah, all he said was calcium carbonate, some gypsum.
The sparge water.
No, he didn't say.
Mm-mm.
Okay. If he's using phosphoric, he could be pulling all of his calcium out. of this barge water, which could... I don't know. 5-6 should be sufficient, but if he's concerned about final running's pH, he could acidify the sparge water lower down to, say, even 5-2, and that would help alleviate that. But for a Kolsch, right? So not a lot of color in the beer.
Right. Couple of thoughts that I have. One is, you know, when somebody says, oh, my beer's astringent, I had so many people say that over time. And then I've tasted it, and then I'm like, what you're tasting isn't astringency. It's, you know, acidic, it's tart, it's, you know, it's this or it's that.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm like, that's not astringency. Astringency is kind of that, you know, mouth puckering bite, that tannic bite.
Suck on a tea bag.
Sucking on a tea bag, yeah. So I always wonder, anytime I hear that, I'm like, are they really talking about astringency or is this something else? I always have to bring that up. Yeah. Assuming that it is astringency, I would look at maybe the water, maybe the mash, but... you know, the step mash... I mean, if other beers are turning out fine and the step mash is the issue, try doing the Kolsch without the step mash. There's no reason to be doing the step mash anyways. It's just, it's not helping. It's not
right.
doing
anything. You're not really buying anything with it.
Yeah, you're wasting your time more than anything. Try it without the step mash and see if you get the same result. If you do, then, okay, it's something else. So that's simple enough, especially if you've done it 6 times. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again and it's turning out problematic 6 times in a row, time to change something up and try getting rid of the step mash. Yeah, your brew day will go quicker and, I'm guessing you'll be happier. Send us an update and let us know. You can send us samples, too, and we can try them.
Yeah. The calcium carbonate's not really going to help adjust your water for a Kolsch. There's not enough acidity in the mash to, I would think. I wouldn't think there'd be a need to add calcium carbonate.
Right.
So.
On the gypsum, you know, you don't really need gypsum either.
Yeah, not for a Kolsch, yeah. Calcium chloride would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But, the carbonate's really not going to go into solution in the time that it takes to mash. It'll come out or it'll be expressed during the boil. So your bitterness may be increased if the boil pH is high as a result. And it's, again, measuring your pH beginning of mash, end of mash, first runnings, you know, last runnings, beginning of the boil, all those points can help you identify where, you know, if pH suddenly is high, that could be where the astringency is coming from, if it is astringency, as Jamil says.
Well, and how do you bring that up? I'm thinking, you know, all the other beers had some, so at least some color malts to them.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, you know, like you're saying, maybe it is a pH mash thing. Because the only lighter color beer was the Kolsch. Everything else, so he was talking a Belgian dark, he was talking an alt, which can have a fair amount of color malts in
right.
it.
Right, right.
And the Scottish could also. Not all of them do, but, I mean, I've seen some pretty dark recipes there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has to do with the water and the resultant pH.
Yeah, during the boil.
Right.
Because if the pH goes up during the boil, you're going to have a harsher bitterness from your hops. and as well as the possibility of some astringency. But be interesting to hear more about that as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. All right. One more?
Yeah.
This one's about metal and kegs. How long does it take a non-pure steel to rust with exposure to water and air 2 to 3 times a day? I've got a customer, he pretty much made some custom fermenters and was cleaning out the weld slag after a day with them sitting in the garage. He noticed a couple of small spots where he must have gotten overly aggressive with a non-stainless steel brush driven by a hand drill and transferred metal onto the keg, which ended up showing rust. Mm-hmm. Since I've noticed the rust in a couple small spots, I cleaned them out with a nylon brush sanding bit, and now they're sitting outside, coming up on the second night, and have been blasted with water several times per day to get any more rust that's going to show start appearing. Should I be good after a couple days and nights with outdoor weather temperature swings and watering it down if nothing is popping up rusty?
Yeah. If he's had it wet and it hasn't shown rust, then you're probably good. You know, the easiest way to clean up, I mean, the way he was cleaning it up had kind of raised some red flags for me with a wire brush and a drill. I mean, that's a good way to transfer, you know, regular non-stainless steel to the stainless and have problems. Again, you know, stainless steel kitchen cleanser will help take that off with a scrubby and clean off your weld tint, you know, the bluish, brownish discoloration. Those oxides are not stainless, and they'll rust as well. But, you know, after cleaning this tank, he's watered it, he's dried it, and he hasn't seen rust appear. After a couple days, he's probably okay. He's probably got it clean.
All right. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll wrap up with a couple more questions right after this.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the BrewingNetwork.com.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. Doing live Q&A. All right. Yeah, I keep seeing live Q&A, and you know, the phones could ring off the hook, but we would never answer them.
Yeah.
It was technology beyond our capabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like emails.
Right. Okay. So
you mean Devo's sitting over there with nothing to do because the phones aren't ringing?
Yeah, she's twiddling her thumbs.
Twiddling something. All right. Speaking of twiddling something, I didn't think she was listening.
Speaking of, yeah, that's what I assumed too. I was like, she won't hear that.
Speaking of twiddling something, if you're in the mood to twiddle, I would suggest getting yourself over to AdamandEve.com today. Home of the great twiddling of products. And if you use the offer code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, you're going to get 50% off almost any one item in stock. And when you do, they're also going to give you 3 free adult DVDs, good to twiddle to, and a free extra gift. So essential, I can't mention what it is on the air, and free shipping. So all you do is pay for the one item at half price, and you get free DVDs, free extra gift, free shipping. It's a great deal. Check it out at AdamandEve.com today. Use the offer code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, at AdamandEve.com. All right, let's wrap up. We got 2 questions. Let's see if we can get through them in the next couple of minutes. And go!
All right. This one's about mangoes and post-fermentation. I had a question about how to add diced IQF mangoes post-fermentation. That's instant quick freeze mangoes, primarily in regards to keeping the beer clear. I know that adding pectinase can remove the pectin haze, and that coupled with gelatin will likely leave me with a clear beer. However, I plan on adding this to the secondary, and I know that alcohol and heat both denature the pectinase enzyme. So should I either do A, just throw the IQF mangoes into my beer after a star sand dip and hope whatever yeast in there will outcompete the bacteria or mold that may be present? Or B, thaw the mangoes to ideal enzyme temperature, blend them, toss them into pectinase for a few hours to do its thing, pasteurize, chill, and toss into my beer. Just wondering what your thoughts and experiences are for this.
I mean, it's kind of like a combo question of pectin haze and whether it's sanitary or not.
Yeah.
With them frozen like that, and then, I mean, are they diced up?
Yes.
Puree diced up.
They just come diced.
Frozen. Yeah. Generally, if they're frozen low enough for long enough, they should be clean. And if your process of handling them is good after that, you should be all right. What I would suggest is just putting them in another container, using the pectinase on them, and then you can just ferment the mangoes, and then you can blend it into your beer after the fact. I kind of like that method now, just because it tends to give a better fruit character, and it gives you a lot more control over dosing it in there.
Fermenting them with the same yeast strain, then?
Yeah. You could use any yeast if you want. Since it's all pretty much fructose, it ferments super easy and super quick. It just takes a day or two. And then you can just pour the dose it into your beer to taste. Works out pretty well. I mean, otherwise, I don't know that I would go through, you know, worrying about pasteurizing it and all that. It's going to make it taste cooked. And if you want that fresh mango character, you don't want to heat it up.
Just use Mosaic. that sounds good. Probably, I was kind of wondering about the pulp and the sediment. How to... and would you rack then away from the sediment to the other fermenter then, huh? Okay. Yeah. That sounds like a good plan, rather than trying to rack the beer onto the mangoes in a fermenter.
Well,
you're saying ferment it separately.
Yeah. And you could. I mean, you can, you know, toss it in and ferment it with the beer. That's fine. But it will ferment by itself, separately. And you can just then just dose it. Your fermented mango juice.
Yeah.
And you could just blend the two entire things together and then let it settle out again. That'd be fine, too.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah. All right, last question.
All right, this last one. Simple question. Is there any reason to do a protein rest on a typical American two-row based beer? I have a European pro brewer friend who swears it helps head retention and mouthfeel and countless other things, but I am not so convinced. Thoughts?
No. Typical American two-row are highly modified. Therefore, a protein rest will only make the already small proteins smaller. You'll put more fan into the wort, but you really won't do anything to enhance your head retention over what you would have had before.
And too much free amino nitrogen can actually cause off flavors.
Yeah.
You can actually have, from fermentation, the yeast will produce some negative aspects through too much free amino nitrogen. I mean, I don't know if you'd get that much from, you know, protein rest, but, I mean, definitely.
There's really no, there's no need to do a protein rest. Mm-hmm. With American malt. If his European friend is using the European malt with lower protein than an American malt and lower modification, then there may be some benefit to doing a protein rest, you know, for a particular brewing method and recipe. But in general, American malts, no.
And even then, I mean, you know, most modern malts, unless they're specifically made to be lower modification and protein, all that, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, modern malts, you shouldn't be doing a protein rest.
No.
And, you know,
we've talked about that. I mean, you won't find a commercial brewer in the U.S. doing multi-step mashing.
Oh, there's some.
Some, but. I mean, most don't.
But, you know, it's the same people who believed it, you know, home brewing and stuck by it and how important it was and yada, 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 yada. And, you know, having to do it every time. You know, or somebody who was trained in Germany. I would imagine, like, you know, maybe Dan Gordon at Gordon Biersch does it or, I mean, maybe. I don't know. For a fact, I really can't remember what he said he did. Yeah, I'm sure there's people doing it. People doing all sorts of stuff.
True. Okay.
So, there you go. People in there diddling away. Right?
Right.
That's what's happening. All right. Another good show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the Brewing Network. And thank you for supporting our sponsors. If you have a moment right now, pull up the browser, type in feedback@blickmanengineering.com, and send John Blickman a nice note telling him thank you for sponsoring the show. He loves to get those emails. And, you know, we'll see you at the Homebrewers Conference in Portland. John Blickman will be there. Porno Steve will be there. John Palmer will be there. And I will be there myself as well. Come on and have some cheese with us. Hey, some cheese. Cheese and some whiz.
Cheese and whiz.
Cheese and whiz. When we have enough beer, we start to whiz. So that's where the whiz comes in. You can also check out the Brewing Network store, brewingnetwork.com/store. There's lots of goodies in there. There's hoodies, hats, shirts. And when you buy all that stuff, it goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network. It helps keep shows like this on the air. Right now, they're running a special on monitor cleaners. A really good monitor cleaner they've got. They are 75% off.
Sure. Yeah. We are actually running a special on almost everything else in the store also.
There you go.
Wow, so there's really
20% to 50% off of almost everything.
There you go. Cyber Monday.
And computer monitor cleaner.
And computer monitor cleaner.
All of you who's always wanted a jet ski, now's your,
yeah,
now's your
if
chance.
If you want the jet skis,
now's your chance.
They are 50% off.
It's never going to be any cheaper.
Right. There you go. So check it out today, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. Till then, everyone, brew strong.
Brew strong, everyone.